Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We're talking about the Billy Meier case, Edward Albert Meier. He's a man in his late 70s, lives in Switzerland in a tiny mountain village called Hinterschmidbruti. It's about 52 minutes east of Zurich. He has a building there called the Semyase Silver Star Center. And that's the home for the group they call the FIGU, which is a free community of interests. It's a group of people that help Billy publish his writings and his materials. He has written over 40 books and probably over 1,000 booklets, over 600 contact notes and hundreds of bulletins about all kinds of very important information. Usually all the big questions in life, he answers in his writings: who we are, where do we come from, what happens after we die, what are the other human civilizations in our galaxy like, and how are they related to us, who built the ancient megalithic and monolithic structures all over the earth. Billy grew up in a town in Switzerland called Bulac, and he started getting his telepathic messages at about 5 years old. And one day he was told to go out into a forest nearby his home in Switzerland. Out of the sky came a silvery pear-shaped craft, and out stepped a man who was somewhere between 900 and 1,000 years old, an elderly-looking human being that looks much like human beings on our Earth. He called himself Thoth. He introduced himself to Billy. He brought young Edward Albert Meier up into the ship, and they went high above the earth, some 70,000 meters, and Billy looked around in the ship, and he could see various screens, and he could see people on these screens, and Thoth was studying the people of the earth. Thoth's people are called the Plearen. They live some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades. That's about 500 light years total. And they live on a world that exists in a different space and time configuration than us, a world called Era, whose biological systems are very much like our Earth. The gravity is a little bit higher. The atmosphere is much thicker than ours. We've lost a lot of our oxygen. The oxygen content is much higher on Era, and that allows things to live longer and grow larger and be much healthier. The people on Era, they live according to these group of creational natural laws. And these laws aren't commands, but they're laws of the universe. The universe has an intelligence called the universal consciousness. And this intelligence has created certain laws that the universe runs by. And the primary law is called the law of love. It's a wisdom conditioned love. One of Billy's later contacts, a woman named Semyase, she put it this way. She said that wisdom and love go together, and the creation and its laws are love and wisdom at the same time. This kind of love is a wisdom-conditioned love that's based on a kind of spiritual observation, a fine, sensitive spiritual feeling that is also talked about using a German word, Empfindungen, which is this ability to perceive things at a much finer level. Love is the highest principle in all creation, and everything follows this principle in absolute logic. Every tiny plant and every tiny animal follows all these laws of nature. And one of the laws of nature that we're discussing now is the law of love. It works a little differently than maybe we think. The law that we should follow is live and help live. In fact, if you're sensitive, you can see this love operating in nature. In fact, nature itself is physical evidence that this love exists. The incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. In creation, it radiates love. In fact, the infinite love of creation, it connects all life, because in all life, that love lies hidden. Now, today, we have a false kind of love, a love based on romance and affection, and that it can be wildly unstable and can cause a lot of suffering, because there's another law called the law of harmony, which requires us to be neutral positive in our thought pattern. That means not to think negatively and not to think positively. But this false form of love tends to get us thinking very positively or very negatively. But we really need to be harmoniously centered in the middle. And if we do that, we maintain the law of harmony, the law of that balance, the law of being, as it's called. Any suffering that exists in your life generally is an effect of wrong thinking. And one of the things that happens is that wrong thinking has to be literally burned out of our psyche through suffering. And I'll read from page 52. In my version of the book, The Might of Thoughts. As a rule, suffering is always an effect of some form of wrong thinking if the suffering relates to negative, bad, or evil outcomes. In this form, incidents of suffering are indicators that the law of harmony is disregarded and broken, and that one is therefore not living according to the law of being, which is directed at progress, love, peace, knowledge, wisdom, joy, and true inner freedom. You see, there's an inner eye, which is related to your spirit form and related to the universal consciousness. And all the creational power comes from that inner eye. All the circumstances of your life arise from your own thinking. And you can have circumstances in your life today that are related to out-of-balance thinking that you had a month ago, 6 months ago, a year ago, or many years ago. So that's how powerful our thoughts are. In fact, one of the big problems is that we have very powerful subconscious and unconscious thoughts that can literally affect reality in the most profound way. Much of the poltergeists, much of the ghost activity is actually caused by people's own thinking. People have terrible effects in their own health. The stigmata, for example, that people suffer, the wounds of Christ, come from their own subconscious and unconscious thinking. So we have a real challenge. Not only do we have to bring our conscious mind into correct thinking. But we also have to try in some way to deal with our subconscious and our unconscious mind, which is, I think, much more difficult. Creation, the universal consciousness of our universe, is not a person. It's not a personification. For example, the Heavenly Father, by most of our religions, they use the term God as a personification. The universal consciousness is an impersonal spiritual energy, and it really doesn't have a personality, despite the fact that its creations are the visible expression of its love. The incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. So if you want an analogy, think of our sun, which radiates light and heat, but has no personality. The universal consciousness radiates love, but it has no personality. All life in our solar system, which is centered on Earth, generally speaking, is all because of the activity of our sun. Without the sun, there could be no life on Earth. And it's the same way with the universal consciousness. And both act in an impersonal way. The universal consciousness has its own evolutionary plan to follow. And a part of that evolutionary plan of the universal consciousness is the creation of human spirit forms. And human spirit forms are created to help the universal consciousness in its evolution. So your spirit form, which is a little bit of energy that resides in your superior colliculus, an area of your middle brain that controls your sight, your spirit form, if you're a typical Earth human, is 4 to 5 million years old. And it's been incarnating in physical lifetimes for the last 4 to 5 million years. And what happens is you spend a certain amount of time in the physical material reality, and then a certain amount of time in what's called the spiritual realm of the realm of beyond, of the beyond. Now, when you reincarnate again into the physical, your spirit form enters into the superior colliculus of the child at 21 days. Now, what also comes in is your material consciousness, your consciousness block, as it's called in the Meyer information, which contains your personality, your new personality. You don't have the same personality. Contains your conscious, unconscious, and subconscious mind. Now, deep in your subconscious mind are the wisdom of your predecessor personalities, which you've had many, many, many. If, of course, if you're 4 to 5 million years, if you spent half of that time in the physical, then you could have spent 2.5 million years in the physical life. And if you spent half of that time in the spiritual, if it was 50-50 split that way, because of our planet is overpopulated, spirit forms tend to spend not enough time in the spiritual realm. And they don't come into life in the material as prepared as they otherwise could and should be. So that is also exacerbating the many problems on this planet. So this is another indication of why it's so important to understand this material. Let me make a quick segue into one of Billy's articles, Meditation from Clear Visibility, which is a very, very important thing to have, particularly if you're under pressures. Let's see what I can remember here. One of them is, I always remain relaxed and thereby gain might over myself. I always remain relaxed and thereby gain might over myself. I always remain relaxed and thereby gain might over myself. And what you can do is you can spend a little time focusing on these. And what it says here is the meditative thoughts and feelings are thereby cultivated again and again by thinking or muttering these sentences several times a day, 3 to 4 times a day, a specific sentence. If you can do it for 5 minutes, that's really good. And it practices your attentiveness. And what these words do when you say them, they start to evoke certain thought forms. Notice it says, I always remain relaxed. That gives you a certain set of certainty. Always. I always remain relaxed and thereby gain might. You're gaining might over your own self. You're not out of control anymore. You're not wildly positive or wildly negative. You're neutral. You're functioning within the law of harmony. You're functioning back again according to the creational natural laws. And that's what we're doing here, we're trying to do. Here's one that I'm working on that will help you if you're faced with big challenges. Everything is achievable for me, and I master whatever I wish to accomplish. Everything is achievable for me, and I master whatever I wish to accomplish. If you can repeat that to yourself over and over again, these words will start to evoke thought forms in your psyche, which will start to help you win the battle of bringing your thoughts back in alignment with the law of harmony. Here's one. The calmer and more tenacious I become, the more I overcome difficulties. The calmer and more tenacious I become, the more I overcome difficulties. Now, I'm spending a whole week on these sentences at a time, maybe two. It could take that long to burn it in. What you're trying to do literally, and let me use the word burn, because that's the word that's used here in the Might of Thoughts when it talks about getting rid of the wrong thoughts. Let me read this. This means that everything which is useless, wrong, and unclean must be burnt out and eliminated from the thoughts. It is said that the pure gold shimmeringly glistens, as does the vision of the human being. If it is pure, but before gold can shimmer and glisten in impurity, all impurities must be burnt out. It's very interesting. They call these thoughts unclean, which I thought was unusual. Useless, wrong, and unclean thoughts. They must be burnt out. So, this very ancient spirit form incarnated in about 1937 in Switzerland in a very young boy. The spirit form is about 9.6 billion years old. And these extraterrestrials watch for this spirit form. They have technologies that are very advanced, and they can kind of track and tell where the spirit form is going to incarnate again. And that's one of the things we're going to talk about a little bit later, is some examples of spirit forms and how they're going to reincarnate again in the FIGU, the group that Billy works with. And we'll get to that in a little bit. Okay, I think I have a caller that wants to call in here in a minute. I think Nate's going to join us. I think he's 949 on the switchboard. Let me get back on track here, and we'll pull Nate in this discussion in just a minute. Again, so this spirit form is 9.6 billion years old, older than our Earth. Try to put that in perspective. The extraterrestrials track the incarnation of this spirit over thousands of years. And one of the reasons they do this, not only they know it's going to incarnate as a teacher and a prophet typically, but it has been their teacher and prophet. And they refer to it by Nokademian. It's incarnated on the earth as the people that we call Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. It incarnated in Lyra Vega, millions of years ago, and before that in another galaxy that no longer exists. It has been up through all the seven evolutionary steps just before it merged back with, was ready to merge back with creation. It had to come back down into the physical as a teacher, as a prophet, to remind us, especially here on Earth, of these creational natural laws. Now, one of the very important creational natural laws that I was just talking about was the law of love. Then we talked about the law of harmony. Let's talk a little bit about the law of striving. Everything in nature has to strive. It has to work. It has to earn its keep. It has to earn its living. And it has to strive to evolve. In the case of human beings, we have to evolve our consciousness. And that's the whole point of our life, is the evolution of our consciousness. Your consciousness evolves with each material lifetime. And those essences of wisdom that you achieved in this lifetime, in your material personality, in your material consciousness, will be in the spiritual realm, changed to their purest form, and then absorbed by your spirit form, which will be strengthened and gain in wisdom for your next material incarnation. And this is the process that goes on and on and on and on. For between 40 to 60 million years, you will incarnate into the physical, and you will live multiple personalities. Now, after that time frame, the human being then evolves into something that's not completely physical. It's kind of a partially physical, partially spiritual form, and you spend about another 60, 70 million years in that form. And then when you go completely spiritual, we spend about a billion years going up this. There are within the spirit level, starting at Arahat Asrasata up to the Patali level, about a billion years is spent there before you merge back with creation. Your spirit form never dies. It never sleeps. It records everything that you do. It will tell you if your thinking is right or wrong. The spirit form cannot be harmed by anything in the physical. It's connected in a way to creation. It has a controlling factor called the Gemut. The Gemut controls your thoughts and the feelings associated with your spiritual consciousness. Your spiritual consciousness also sends the material consciousness these electromagnetic signals, these swinging waves, which tend to strengthen the human psyche. The psyche is what controls the thoughts and the feelings of your material consciousness. I think I'm about ready to bring Nate on. I'm not sure exactly what number he is. Let me double check here. 661.
Hello?
Nate, that's you. That's
yeah,
good.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm on the Skype, so.
I was going to talk a little about Contact Report 72, but before I do that, I know you got some interesting stuff for us, so I'm all ears.
Okay.
Put you on the spot.
Way to put me on the spot. All right. Some of the things that you know I've been going over this week I think are pretty interesting is correction and self-correction and reevaluating your thinking. And you were talking a little bit earlier about the law of harmony, and you read an excerpt from The Mind of the Thoughts, and I found that very interesting because if you're out of harmony, you'll have misery of some sort, and that's very self-empowering, if you will. But one of the things that I came across recently, or I had been touting recently, is the idea of apologizing and saying please and saying thank you. In our group, someone had mentioned that we're not supposed to apologize. The spirit teachings say don't apologize. Instead, recognize the thinking that led to that mistake in the first place and try not to repeat it.
I like that. Did they elaborate on why we shouldn't apologize? It seems to make more sense to me, but I'm not sure exactly all the mechanics. But that seems to be logical.
Yeah, that is kind of interesting because, you know, as I started thinking about it, I'm trying to apply that logic across the board. And the logic, I think, goes something like, you know, it's who am I to have authority over you or something to that effect? And at the same time, why would you give up your harmony and your peace of mind to a magic word, you know, such as an apology?
Right.
But then, like, if you think about it, if you say the word please, I think there's something, you know, there. So I was thinking about please, and I was thinking, well, if you say please, isn't that kind of like the same thing? And so I was thinking about it, and it seems like it was the same thing. You know, you should do the right thing because it's the right thing, not because someone is saying, once again, a magic word. And then, as I come across a recent what we were supposed to where I was supposed to study at the last meeting that I couldn't make, it's the might of right words and right behavior.
Oh.
And I think it's off the Figu site of Canada.
I think I printed those out the other day. Yeah. I hadn't got to studying those yet. I'm glad you brought this up.
So it talks about using, you know, because as there's, what is it? I'm going to mess this up. But so there's like the seven points for the striving ones that kind of talk about different attitudes to take on. And I'll bring those up later on, a little bit later. Mm-hmm. I have to look them up.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, as I was swaying towards not using the word please, it is actually brought up in this document. And it talks about how please and using the word please and should and shall are very important, and that they do not attempt to subvert the other human being's free will, that that when someone does something, it doesn't seem like it's a command, rather it seems like a voluntary choice. We've both been in jobs for a long time, and I think the managers that use the word must with us, we must do this, you know, it kind of puts like a downer on it. Versus one that would say we should probably do this, you know, which kind of invites you into a way of thinking where you can analyze it, like you don't feel so forced, and then and as it invites you in, you're able to take it apart and think about it and seemingly make decisions on it.
Well, there's a point here on the paper you're talking about that says the same laws and recommendations of creational natural origin teach that the human being not fight for the power of domination over the fellow human beings, but should treat them as all others with equality. So that goes along with what you're saying, I think.
Yeah, and that's what it's for, really. I mean, half the time when I'm experienced at trying to disseminate this information, a lot more proactively than I think other people are, you know, without proselytizing, right? And without like really coming on strong. Because it also talks about how you can say the wrong thing and turn people off, and And this is if I have a weakness, this is one of my weaknesses or something I have to overcome or I need to adjust on, is speaking when I shouldn't be speaking and recognizing my audience at times.
That's interesting. Sounds profound. Another interesting point here on this page is, and it is a fact, that there is a great power struggle going on relating to power and the domination of fellow human beings, so that all the foot soldiers and those subordinated by the power and control hungry greed ones have nothing truly humane to expect. If the domineering power and power wielding is looked at more closely regarding the fellow human being, then it can be recognized that neither honesty and decency, neither humaneness and honor nor dignity come into play when it comes to achieving might. So I guess the idea of trying to gain power over others is not correct at all.
Yeah, and so I think this comes at it with you try to see the fellow human being as, you know, a spirit having a physical experience and all the levels that go in with that, and you try to recognize that first, and then move outwards from that. So, you know, respecting the individual, respecting their dignity and their free will. It's all about what, you know, the might of speaking is about.
Do you ever feel like the way our society is kind of structured, though, is undermining some of these principles, that, you know, maybe corporate America is kind of all about power and gaining power, and sometimes it can be a place where this kind of thinking is completely out of the picture, or am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. And this actually goes into it in a sense, because it is actually carried forward by the corporate media or media in general. And it talks about in the 80s how an emergence of a new type of attitude came about, and which has led to a very apathetic attitude in human beings, where they would accentuate the wrong parts of a word. Like, is so-and-so doing something? Are they really? You know, or like, oh my goodness. Like they were throwing off the whole language, you know, in English. And I guess this has happened all over the world in a lot of other cultures as well. But I'm guessing mainly the European, though.
Well, what about political correctness? Does that also fall in this?
Yeah, that's. I mean, what needs to be said needs to be said, and so political correctness, if it doesn't go along with, you know, for example, what is that? The there's laws now in Switzerland that basically state that you can't speak out against different people because the defamation laws are just so abhorrently bad.
Right.
I
read that in one of the contact notes. Billy said that you can even go to jail for saying certain things like that.
Yeah, which is like, who makes that? Someone in power must have made that, who was, you know, some sort of pedophile or something, you know.
I don't know. Oh, that's crazy, man. That's crazy. Yeah, that's why I'm thinking in some ways our society is degenerating. And I think that's why I think I'm so glad that you started out talking about, you know, for the past month or so, or even before that, the meditation from clear visibility. Because I think there are a lot of things in these meditations that, I mean, here's a simple one: within me exists neither anxiety nor fear. You know, just saying these things brings your mind back to clarity and to being centered. I haven't ever known Billy to be politically correct. Have you?
No. In fact, I know certain people that This document also talks about a certain type of person that has a truth-bearing confidence. You know, they say what needs to be said, no less, no more.
Mm-hmm.
And I know some pretty strong engineers that are kind of like that, that attitude. And strangely enough, or not strangely enough, coincidentally enough, they also are the ones that don't like to read off the computer when they're learning something.
Oh, really? That's interesting. Anyone who's listening to this show and hasn't heard us talk about this, I'll repeat it again. Do not read electronic material off the computer. It destroys your mind. It can have even bad effects on your body. And print all the contact notes out. Print them out. Read them. And do not read off of the computer screen if you can avoid it. Sometimes we have to a little bit, but try to avoid it as much as possible. Go ahead, Nate.
Yeah, and I was just going to say that as well. For those people who hadn't caught earlier episodes, this is very important. When you do find something and you find it interesting on the internet and stuff, that you print it out and read it so that you have a correct interaction with it. Using the internet or using the devices in the earlier on in the show, you were talking how Billy was taken up by Safoth in a ship.
Mm-hmm.
And there were screens in there that had pictures of people, you know, around the planet, and Safoth was studying them.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not saying, hey, don't use the computer, don't use the technology. You just have to use it responsibly. And most of us, you know, are not using it responsibly.
Okay. I think if you spend hours particularly staring at the screen, you know, unfortunately we have to kind of do that at our jobs sometimes, but try not to read anything. There's something about reading that you will find it much better to print it out. And there are even something called fine fluidal energies, which your body emits and will go into the paper, will go into the book, and when you reconnect with the book or the paper, you also reconnect with the focus that you had when you were studying this. So it's kind of this feedback loop, this cycle, and it's a natural cycle and it should be there. So, and it's a physical cycle. So the electronic screen interrupts that cycle. And somehow it even damages us. Continue, Nate. Go ahead.
So if you were to read a very atrocious story on the internet, you know, you turn it off and usually that goes away, like almost instantly. But you were to read about it in the newspaper or a book, you have it there. And, you know, if there's an action required by you to help further your development, well, it's there, and it's kind of pinging you. So this also leads to a sense of, you know, I always thought that you know, when oftentimes people were talking about the new popular supposed disease ADHD,
wow.
that it was a result of video games and television and computers. Well, mostly the video games and the television, because if you look and watch television at all, you'll notice that most scenes do not last longer than 3 seconds.
Yeah.
So if you can't keep the child's attention span for 3 seconds, and then you have to change and do something else, then yeah, there's a reason why we're in the state we are in. And if we continue down this path, things are just going to degenerate more and more and more. And a correction of thinking needs to take place. And it needs to take place at a level where the information is actually disseminated, you know, and people become the most important thing and not a commodity to be used by other people.
One thing that's good about the Meyer information is it kind of takes on a power of its own if you can memorize little bits and pieces. And I've done that over the years, and I found it extremely helpful. So, like, for example, the meditation from clear visibility. Everything is achievable for me, and I master whatever I wish to accomplish. I master all difficulties with courage and a victor's readiness. Within me exists neither anxiety nor fear. So say these out loud, and if you say them out loud, you'll notice that they affect your thinking, and you can't help it. It will affect your subconscious thinking. It will affect your unconscious thinking. And people sometimes don't realize, and I never realized, that we have unconscious thinking, subconscious thinking, and sometimes those thoughts are more powerful than our conscious thoughts. For example, unconscious and subconscious thoughts are the thoughts that sometimes cause the poltergeists in people's houses. Literally, people's own thoughts are creating these images and things. There are other causes that can cause it. But, for example, the stigmata that appear on people's hands are caused by their own thinking, their own subconscious thinking. So do not let your thoughts go uncontrolled. Do not let your thoughts, if you find your thoughts going back to old memories that rekindle bad feelings and bad thoughts, stop those thoughts right away, because you want to stay focused on healthy thoughts, wholesome thoughts, thoughts that will nurture your psyche. Because we're in a situation now where you can't afford to be sloppy in your thinking. So, I want to talk a little bit about Contact Report 72, Nate, and I think you will find this interesting as well. There is a area in the north of Switzerland, and it says here, you should absolutely avoid this long stretching zone here, because this is, like nearly all flatland in the north of Switzerland, will be destroyed by possible later atomic fire during war actions, if the ancient prophecy should be fulfilled, which, however, is to hope that this does not happen. I thought that was really interesting, because evidently in the third millennium, even Switzerland is not going to escape from some of the craziness that is going to happen. Contact 72 took place before the Semyase Silver Star Center was created. And it says here, this is also the location which is predestined for the center. They're talking about this area, which is away from the flat areas that I was just talking about. Which I thought was interesting. Nate, did you know that north part of Switzerland may get nuked at some future date?
Yeah, you reminded me of it. I do remember seeing this map that they have here on the Future of Mankind website.
Mm-hmm.
And this just brings me back to the word or the sentence that was in the Henoch prophecies, something to the effect of, due to the actions of the infallible ones, Switzerland will be no longer the country of peace or neutrality, which is already the case in the new time, because they were a part of the last Desert Storm action, I believe it was. Yeah, and people got greedy and they decided, hey, you know, it's good to kill people and it's good to, feel the, military. I don't know any other reasoning behind their actions except for greed, And we know that the military industrial complex is very profitable for those who are selling things.
It is very much so. I want to move on. We were talking about incarnation, reincarnation earlier. Here's some hard examples in the Meyer group. It says here, many of your group will find their next incarnations as new possibilities in the center as built by you, which will be steered with our and your own help, as well as by the center built by you, for which we will give you the instructions. Also, we will monitor the building of the center into the appropriate form and give you detailed instructions and stand by your side and good advice. So evidently, the people that are in the FIGU now, that are in the center, in their future lifetimes will start to incarnate as different personalities in the center. Let me continue here. Some of the present group will spend an extremely short time in the beyond area before they come to the center and join into the group as other personalities through a rebirth into physical form. The first of the present members will begin again to incarnate as another person into the group between the years 2012 and 2025, others between 2033 and 2036, and the rest between the years 2045 and 2072, always assuming that everything fulfills itself. The reason for this rapid succession is that the work is not allowed to lie fallow and must be continued forward so that the knowledge, despite all the coming confusion and maliciousness, slowly spreads over your world, because only as a result of those of the enormously further growing humanity grasp the knowledge and be guided into the path of true evolution. And this is one thing that it talks about, the third millennium is a time of confusion and maliciousness, and those exact same words are used in other contact notes. So the people are going to be reincarnating, and it again talks about them by name. Let me continue here. It says, however, you leave out the names of those who incarnate again so soon. This is Billy talking. You said that you are allowed to mention some names. Semyase says, surely despite a desertion of the group and the mission, and despite nasty betrayal among others, the first will be Olga, Arnata, Claire, Elsa. Oh, sorry, that was Amata, Claire, and Elsa, who again will incarnate as female forms. If all is actually fulfilled, which, however, partly is in question. Their names and personalities, however, as you know, will no longer be the same, but such of a special type, which today on Earth would sound strange, and I'm not allowed officially to mention. Some others who will also be there, with Egilbert, who again will appear as a male form between 2053 and 2066, with at the same time Margareth, who will incarnate as a male life form, as well as also Herbert, however, also assuming that everything fulfills itself as the new personalities. So one thing I think is interesting about this, Nate, is they have the technology to know when spirit forms, or at least roughly, are going to come back, which I think is really interesting, especially because I think I've heard that they track the spirit form of, you know, that's currently residing in Edward Albert Meyer, who has incarnated as an Nicodemian, as Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, Muhammad, and in the even as their teacher in the past. Can you comment, Nate?
What came to mind here is if our science caught up and was somehow able to prove the existence of spirit so that it was so objective to it was so objectively obvious to the materialites, and that's most people on the planet, the materialites, just saying there's no real people called the materialites. So I think like almost overnight, things would change, knowing that you were coming back. You couldn't get away from the mess you build. You wouldn't go about leaving the place in such an awful state, you know, with the whole idea after me, the flood mentality. I don't care, whatever, you know, it's not all, I don't know. It's just very poor of people that, whatever, lost my thought, but
it's irresponsible.
Yeah, very irresponsible. But if we could prove, and obviously here's the thing, right? Here's what I've been thinking about also a lot is I've been thinking about the way we actually go about communicating, the objective to one another. Like, if you, and everything happens subjectively, and, you know, if you were to tell me about, hey, Nate, this food is really good, try it, and I taste the food, and I go, oh, this is horrible, what are you mm-hmm. eating? You know, we're sticking the same thing in our mouth, but yet we're having completely different responses to it, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the only way I can recognize that you actually have taste buds is, you know, I see me somewhat as part of you, or see myself in you, like, oh, he's got a mouth, da-da-da. Now, the thing with people who become more advanced and can understand the six and seven senses, which have been in atrophy because we haven't been taught about them or using them as widely as we should be, it would be akin to if someone didn't have a nose and you were trying to describe what something smelled like.
Wow.
And they would say, no, that, you're like, how would you describe that to somebody?
Almost impossible. Know? Almost impossible.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know how
so
you do that at all.
That's definitely the hill we have to climb, you know, as being on the fringe, if you will, of bringing this information forward.
Well, the thing that continually amazes me about it is I continue to learn and learn and learn and learn. And it's just like, how did I miss the law of harmony the first X number of times I went through the mind of thoughts? And I could remember when reading through the meditation from Clear Visibility that, you know, several months ago, it just wasn't my time to understand this because it was like bouncing off. It just wasn't absorbing. I don't know why. But now it's so critical and so important. Let me throw a little bit else out about these incarnations, which I thought were very interesting. Listen to this, Nate. Between 2065 and 2072, Jacobus Marcel Calliope will reincarnate. Remember Billy's ex-wife? Conrad, Hans, Paula, and Polly appear again, in addition to several further persons whose names are unknown to you. However, in the course of the near future, in the next few years, you will come to meet them. So I guess Calliope is, she's part of the group. I mean, which I
absolutely
thought was very interesting. I mean, because she kind of ran away from everything.
Well, you got to remember that Billy, part of Billy needed a lot of that, what would be that toil, that negativity or whatnot, to really
wow.
comprehend his level of understanding of what love is, right?
So he needed the pressure to order to focus.
Mm-hmm.
The pressure helped him focus.
Absolutely. Like refining, you know, on an anvil, refining and pounding that, you know, metal sheet into something usable.
Oh, man. Sometimes that's not a fun process.
No, it's not.
It's really not fun. I don't look forward to that. I don't like when I have to go through that.
But you know, when you go through and you're on the other side, if you have the right eyes to see, you know, you learned a lot. And I think one of the biggest takeaways for me, in you know, just as I've been studying this material, is I enjoy the pain and suffering because I know by keeping the right attitude, I'm going to learn so much, and I'm going to grow so much because of it. You know,
well,
and
right.
I'm not going to.
The law of striving says your joy and your happiness will continue as you strive more. That's probably what you're feeling. You know, one of the keys there, I think, is also while you're doing that intense striving, and you probably have learned this already, while you're going through the intense striving to stay neutral. Because sometimes the act of striving, the act of working, can lead us into negativity and get us out of balance. Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think the thing that I like one of the most is what we kind of went over in the way to live.
Mm-hmm.
part of what we read about love last week. I'll just spit it out here really in verbatim form. Unfortunately, the human being often only searches for love out of anxiety or to find calmness, pleasure, or gratification. However, this is the wrong way and a wrong form of the love, which is only artificially created in order to fulfill emotional or lustful wishes. In this form of the love, it is better for the human being if he or she covers the nakedness of his or her greed and searches for the true value of the love in order to find a way out of his or her world without reasons, which only conveys monotony, and in which he or she laughs without being able to enjoy it, and in which he or she cries without shedding tears, which would bring him or her release.
What I really captured from that passage was covers the nakedness of their greed. Could you read that part again?
Yeah, that struck me too, right? Unfortunately, the human being often only searches for love out of anxiety or to find calmness, pleasure, or gratification. However, this is the wrong way and a wrong form of the love, which is only artificially created in order to fulfill emotional or lustful wishes. In this form of the love, it is better for the human being if he or she covers the nakedness of his or her greed and searches for the true value of the love in order to find the way out of his or her world without seasons, which only conveys monotony, and in which he or she laughs without being able to enjoy it, and in which he or she cries without shedding tears, which would bring him or her release.
So sometimes when we think we are behaving in love, it's really a kind of naked greed.
Absolutely. I have friends that, even myself, but I have friends that I can see clearly, like, the reason they're in their relationship is almost because they don't want the drama. They want the drama.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and it just slides, and you start thinking about this. And if anybody doesn't have this book, I would recommend getting it because of, like, stuff like this is you. I've read this like maybe 30 times now, and
that one passage?
Every time I read it. No, this is a passage, verse 60. I actually made a YouTube reading of this. I actually redid it this morning, and I got to post that again because I didn't like the last one that went up. So.
Well, then, so when we sometimes think we're functioning out of love, it's actually a kind of naked greed of self-fulfillment or gratification or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm. And this, absolutely. my mind just raced like 20 different directions there.
Well, you know, like we said, this material is very profound. It's already the stream's about over. We could certainly look forward to Sunday. We'll be chatting about this again about 5:30 Sunday if you want to join us. You're listening to Ohio Exopolitics. Thanks for joining us, Nate. And I'll be on at 8 p.m. Eastern this evening with Glenn Steckling on Revolution Radio. Join us tomorrow. We'll be talking about the Meyer material again. Have a great evening.